is a new group, Alcoholics Anonymous. It just was born Sunday morning over here when Mike D said, let's rent the hall. Sounded like a good idea at the time. And so he rented the hall Monday morning. And a group of us, maybe eight people, went to work. And we have this meeting tonight because of all this. And our speaker tonight is a man I've known for 20 years. His name is Johnny H. He's my sponsor. He lives in Long Beach. Johnny.
Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm always glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and but to be in the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is really kind of like a special little thing. It's something begins and ends in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you're new in AA tonight, and I know there are a lot of new people in AA tonight, I hope the word being sober doesn't offend you as bad as it offended me when I said in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I said in my first meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people of Alcoholics Anonymous talked to me about being sober, I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. As physically sober. But you see, I never wanted to be sober. I never ever wanted to be sober. Sober seemed to be a nightmare with me. Sober is when I was faced with a long line of the wreckage of the past staring right down here. And I was thinking about it last night. I was at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason I'm sober today and have been sober from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to this one is that I just got sick and tired of me. I'd been sick and tired of you for a long, long time, but I just finally got sick and tired of me. I couldn't put it off on anybody or anything anymore, and I just had nothing left but me. And so, by a stroke, by a miracle that I stumbled into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm here to tell you that if I'd have known where I was coming when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have come. I just wouldn't have come. But I seem to understand that the power that's looked out after me all my life seemed to understand what it takes to get all of us to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. There seems to be something in way down deep inside of us that gets us, no matter what our head tells us or no matter what we think or what we should do, that seems to get us right where we're supposed to be, doing what we're supposed to be doing, hearing what we're supposed to be hearing. And an old man that I loved a great deal a long time ago, like a father of man who's dead now, his name was Chuck, he made a little statement that I used to love. He said, one of the things about the disease of alcoholism is that you can only hear when you can hear, and you can only see when you can see, and there's nothing you can do about it, and it don't make any difference who's talking. And that's the truth. Now, I'm glad to be here tonight. If you're new, I hope you stick around Alcoholics Anonymous to come to understand what we mean in Alcoholics Anonymous when we talk about sobriety. You see, when I think about being sober, the idea that there's no alcohol or chemicals running in and out of my system doesn't even enter the picture anymore. Sobriety is the way I live. I lived a certain way for a long period of time, and for a long period of time I couldn't stay sober and I couldn't stay out of trouble. I have lived an entirely different way for over 31 years of my life, and in all that period of time it had been necessary for me to drink anything, swallow anything, smoke anything, or stick anything in my arm. And if I lived till the 4th of June, it's been 30 years since I've had to be locked up anywhere. Now that, to me, is really something. Being sober is one thing, but not being locked up somewhere, that's another thing. That's even a little deeper than this not-get-a-loaded business, I'll tell you that. Because people like me just can't seem to keep from getting locked up. Because I am a menace to society. I'm selfish, and I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving, and I got an ego bigger than this whole room. If you got something I wanted, I just took it. That's the way I lived my entire lifetime before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't know that. I knew as much about what alcohol would do to people when I was 6 years old as I know tonight at 60. I had a ringside seat watching whiskey destroy people. I sat around as a child. I watched my uncle drink whiskey and go to penitentiaries. I watched my aunt drink whiskey and work on those houses on the other side of the tracks. I watched Mom drink whiskey and beat up Dad. I watched Dad drink whiskey and beat up Mom. I watched them both drink whiskey and beat me up. I saw what whiskey do to people. And as far back as I could ever possibly remember, I said, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to be better than they are. But one day, sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house, I reached down underneath the porch where he'd stashed his jug, and I took a drink. I just took a drink. Something that I said I'd never do, I did. And in that instant of my life, I sold myself into bondage for the next 20 years of my life. A bondage that took me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. I didn't know it until I'd been sober for a while and been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while and come to understand the disease of alcoholism. As I look back on it now, I found out that I had some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It wasn't a bad reaction, it was an abnormal reaction. This allergy of the body that I have to alcohol seemed to manifest itself in a phenomenon of craving because I just never quit drinking. And every time I drank for the next 20 years of my life, the same thing happened to me. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol, they stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I was traveling out there. I went from reform school, to junior penitentiaries, to penitentiaries, to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I really feel kind of sorry for some of these half-hip hope fiends who are floating in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous today. In my day, it was really kind of macho, to be somewhere. I remember standing on the street corner when I was a kid on referral from reform school, and somebody would say, "There's old Joe. He just got out of San Quentin." We went, "Oh, our hero. Oh, I just come out of Whittier State Reform School, yeah." How would you like to have to walk up on the street corner now and somebody say, "Hey, where you been, man?" So, "Well, I just did 30 days in the care unit." Not my neighborhood. It just doesn't seem to have a ring of machoism about it. Just some... "Oh, what did you do, drink goat milk?" But, I'm sitting on a furlough from a reform school when I'm 10 or 11 years old, and I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine because that was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. I'll tell you how bad that stuff was. It never saw a grape. That's how bad it was. I don't know what it had in it, but it was bad news. But I'm sitting here and I'm drinking this stuff, and it ain't working, and I don't know what to do about it. And the guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Why don't you try these?" And he gave me some pills, and I don't remember saying to him, "What are those? Do you think they'll bother me if I take them?" Thank God they weren't X-Lax, that's all I can tell you. I have a whole new 12-step program. I could call Laxatives Anonymous, I suppose. I could be the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was little. They bring sicker psychobabble than that into some of the meetings I go to. Boy, you ought to hear, "Really? Works," all I can tell you, because I'm sitting on that same street corner on a furlough from reform school a couple of years later, and I'm eating these pills, and I'm drinking this wine, and the guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague out there. I just walk around in life and use up everything that comes near me. I'm selfish and I'm self-centered, and people like me, selfish and self-centered people who wander through life without any conscious concern or thought for any other human being in life. That's the way I live my life. I never had any conscious thought or conscious concern for any other human being in my world before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was only interested in me. I wasn't interested in you. The only time I was interested in you if you had something I needed. And then I was interested in you until I got it. And then I had nothing to do with you anymore. And that's the way I lived my life. I spent my life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous without... I never one time before I ever came here ever told anybody that I loved them. And the reason I didn't tell them that is because I'm a taker. Takers don't love people. Takers use people. If I told you I loved you, I gave you an edge, and if you had an edge, you're going to be able to use me. And I never put myself in that position before I came to AA. Not me. And I'll tell you what will happen to you if you live that way for any length of time. You'll turn around one of these days and won't be anybody sending you penny postcards anymore. A little over 33 years ago, I crawled around a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary not very far from here without anybody sending me a penny postcard. There wasn't anybody left. I just used them all up, and all I had was me. And I'm going to tell you something. When you get that far down in your life and all you got is you, you try to do one or two things. If your brain doesn't explode, you'll try to kill yourself. And I try to do them both. What people like me do. Because sooner or later, all the synthetic answers that I had in my life quit being answers and became problems. See, I've always needed an answer. I needed an answer from my earliest recollection of life. And I thought when I took a drink, it was an answer. It was an answer. It was not a problem when I took it. It was an answer. I'd have never lived to be 12 years old if I hadn't taken a drink. I was just too weird. I'd have never lived if I hadn't. Alcohol and drugs were the best friend I ever had. It was the best friend I ever had. And I'm going to tell you something. Way down deep inside of me is the knowledge that when life is tough and I can't stand it anymore, I know what makes the big hurt go away. I live with the knowledge. I have the experience. It's the only thing that ever made it go away before I came to AA. But thank God for 31 years, 4 months, and 9 days, I haven't had to find any type of synthetic answer to this thing called life. No matter what's coming down the pike, I've been able to live with it one day at a time. So something basically never happened to me. Nothing I did out on them streets ever happened to me. I did everything. I ran wild. I'm on the way to the penitentiary in 1951, and my mother stood in the Los Angeles County Jail and called me a murderer. Said my baby brother had gotten into some of my poison, took an overdose of it, and died. I spent the next 4.5 years of my life locked up in a penitentiary. I came out of there trying to prove what a psychiatrist in San Quentin told me wasn't true. He said, people like you don't change, Johnny. He says, you're doomed to die in an institution. He took me down and showed me a little green room. He says, you're going to end up here, hot shot. And I told him, not me, I'm different. I'm different. Theme song of the alcoholic. You know, that's the thing that would kill me today. Being different here. The dander killed me after I got here. Sitting in this room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous people, when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, glorifying myself in my differences. Damn it, killed me before I got here. It kept me from ever having any type of peace until I removed the differences and remembered the similarity. I came out of that penitentiary bound and determined I had that DOB because I sat up in that penitentiary and figured out what my problem was. My keen alcoholic mind told me what my problem was. You know the only people who talk about the keen alcoholic mind are alcoholics? Nobody else ever talked about the keen alcoholic mind. You go talk to some of these non-alcoholics who live with these alcoholics. If you had the keen alcoholic, got up last night and peed in the linen closet. It looked like a good idea to me. My keen alcoholic mind told me in San Quentin my problem was heroin. That was my problem. If I just don't use that heroin, I won't be in any trouble. So I came out and I smoked grass and ate pills and drank whiskey. And 6 months later, I ended up in the nut house kicking and screaming. Because I don't know enough about stopping. And that's when I made my round to some of the better laughing academies in the country interviewing psychiatrists. We had great conversations, the doctors and I. They talked to me about my mother, and I talked to them about their mother. And they introduced me to a thing called better living through electricity. Wonderful. You may tap on this microphone, Jim, but you'll never see. Are you still counting money back there? It's a little weird, I'll tell you that. What I hope and pray to God is my last interview with a psychiatrist happened to me in a federal government hospital in Fort Worth, Texas, almost 34 years ago. If I lived to be 1,000 years old, I'll never forget that day, as long as I live. I remember moving in and sitting down in that man's office. I remember they shuffled me in there and set me down in a chair. I remember looking up against the wall, and I remember looking at all of his diplomas and his plaques and his degrees and his awards that he got from whatever he was doing. And I think for an instant, just an instant, maybe for longer than an instant. I think that the moment I sit in that chair and lift up against that wall, I think for an instant that there was some hope born in me for the first time in my life, that maybe this is the end. Because now I got a problem, because the things I'm ingesting into my system no longer work, and I'm in a lot of trouble. Now I can't get rid of the nightmares. The tapes won't go off. As long as I'm awake, I'm in trouble. I have to keep overdosing just to keep level anymore. It's just getting terrible out there, and I don't know what to do about it. So there was some hope there, I suppose. But when the doctor opened his mouth to speak, he never spoke 2 minutes before every moment of hope I had was clean out the window, because he looked at me and he said, "Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems." You know, when I was a kid in the Hutchinson State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be all right. When I was in juvenile hall in Los Angeles, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be all right. When I was at Whittier State Reform School, they told me if I didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, I'd be all right. They told me that in Pacific Lodge Boys Home. They told me that in San Quentin. They told me that in Folsom. They told me that in Lexington, Kentucky. They told me that in Fort Worth. They told me that everywhere I went. But you know what none of them ever took into consideration? Every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. As physically sober. And how many times I wanted to scream out, "And good God, doctor, don't you understand?" Because he don't understand. He just don't understand. See, if you don't have my disease, you'll never understand it. If you're not like me, you'll never understand the nightmare that I live in. And you'll never understand why the solution seems so easy. Most of the people like me, they don't understand why I drink, and I don't understand why they don't. I don't. Good God, drink! I was on a plane today, and some woman got on there and stood alongside of me. Now, she sits there, and the guy come along and with a cart and gave me a ginger ale, a can of ginger ale. Now, we just lifted off. You know what I mean? I'm drinking this stuff. She got a can of tomato juice. She poured it in a glass. She drank that much out of it all the way up here. And I sat there and watched her. "What the hell's wrong with you? Why do you waste stuff like that?" I'd have really been hot if she'd had a drink, I'll tell you that. But So when that man said that to me, any hope that I had was gone. And I came back to Los Angeles, and a little over 34 years ago, they tied me down in a bed in a Los Angeles County jail, more dead than alive. Matter of fact, I arrived at the Los Angeles County jail dead on arrival. I was 128 pounds and yellow, and I had 2 years doing to me exactly what I wanted to do to me anytime I wanted to do it. And that's the kind of shape, and that's the kind of situation that I end up in when I run my own life. That's what I do to me. Having my own answers and my own thought processes and my own keen idea. Doctor stood at the foot of my bed that day and told me I was going to die. He said, "You're going to die, son. There's nothing we can do for you." That was good news. I wanted to die. I wanted out. I couldn't stand it anymore. I wanted out. Nothing's working anymore. The nightmares are there. I wanted out. But I didn't die. I just laid there. And all day passed and all night passed. He come back in my room the next morning. He said the same thing. The third day he came in there, I'd lay there. A terror gripped me that I've never known before since. It gripped me, and it just frightened me. I thought I was going to live and not die. I was going to have to get up out of the bed and go to the penitentiary and come back out and start that rat race. I didn't want to do that anymore. I'm tired. God, I'm tired. And I don't know what to do about it. I laid there in that bed 18 days and 18 nights. I don't remember eating, sleeping, drinking, or doing it. I just remember laying there. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened. There were no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an A meeting down there." I get up and wander off somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while, and I got better and better. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on the bed I just gotten off of. And there's a good reason for that. In the back of my mind, where my problem seems to be centered, is the knowledge. That when I can't stand life any longer, I can ingest something into my system and it's okay right now. Right now. And that's all I ever wanted. I never wanted to be all right the day after tomorrow. I want it right now. So I got loaded again. I stood in front of a Superior Court judge, and the man called me a blood-sucking parasite in society. He told me I didn't have any right being around decent people. Told a woman carrying my child, she carried anything about her child, that I'd never be allowed to lay eyes on it. What that man said to me that day literally drove me insane. Because you see, there's one thing I have never been able to do, ever. I wasn't able to do it before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not able to do it since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not able to do it from this day forward. I can't hide me from me. Now, I can hide me from you. I'm a master at it. I can keep you as far away from me as I want to keep you away from me by various little tricks that I learned in my life, just by some of my little images that I built around me, kept you away from me. That's what I do. I keep people out there, but I've never been able to hide me from me. And when the man that day in that courtroom put into words what I'd always known about me, my brain literally exploded. And so I crawled around that cell, drifting in and out of total insanity for the next 9 months of my life. And on the fourth day of November 1959, I wandered in and sat down in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not for any magnificent reason. The reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous a little over 31 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. I mean, you open up the door, some of us vent vendors are going to come in. I mean, it's just the way it works. I remember moving in and sitting down in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. I had my coat collar up and my shades on. I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. I remember looking up on the back row, I saw two big gates, and I thought I'd wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I didn't know what AA was. I thought, well, I said, I'll wait for these women to tell their racy stories. And now, you got to remember something, too, that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't very many young, pretty girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. There just wasn't. These old gals got up to talk that day, and they said they drank for a long time. You could look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. They said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. I knew everything. People in the back row know everything. They just don't know how to stay sober, that's all. They know everything else. Ask them. Say, what's wrong with everything? There's a paragraph in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which they read out of tonight. There's a paragraph in the tail end of a spiritual experience that will describe me to you better than anything I could possibly ever say when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That there's a principle which is a boon to mankind, which is bound to keep in everlasting ignorance. That is a principle of contempt prior to investigation. You see, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was so frightened of failing, I didn't try anything. I didn't try nothing. I knew something that worked, and it wasn't working, and I was afraid to try anything else. That's the way I was. I knew so damn much what wasn't true when I got here. I didn't know what was true. I was so wrapped up in my insanity when I sat in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that the only thing that penetrated in there and sent chills up and down my spine is when I sat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this day, these people talked about God. And I got up and ran out of the room because God was the reason I was. It was not my fault. But I came back to the meeting the following Sunday because I found out there was a different group of people who came to that institution every Sunday, and I went back to that second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to find out what these people were doing. And I didn't know. The people of Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely and totally baffled me when I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what their deal was. It absolutely baffled my mind. I had no concept of what the hell was going on in an AA meeting. I'd hear people get up at podium and say, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything is wonderful. I'd say, I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. I wish I was alcoholic, I'd say to them. If I could just be that simple, that all I have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay. But there's something far more wrong with me than that. There really was. Not an alcohol problem. It's a disease called alcoholism. I didn't know that. It said, get active. I run around like a chick with my head cut off. I didn't know what active. I thought active was being in motion or something. I finished doing whatever I was doing and sit in the corner back there in inventory point and die, for Christ's sake. I was doing what they told me to do, and I'm wacko. It ain't working for me. And every time I ask anybody about it, they say, oh, it's in the book. What's in the book? Oh, it's there. I found out a very secret thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you want to hide anything here, put it in the book. Nobody looks there. Now they think it's kind of chic to ask your therapist about it. What do you think? Here, take this. Oh, thank you. I don't even want to drink. I didn't need it when I was using heroin. I didn't want to drink either, for Christ's sake. You know what baffled me about the people of Alcoholics Anonymous when I came here, and people like me, I think it still baffles a lot of newcomers. They can't figure out what we get in alcohol. What happens? What do these people get out of AA anyhow? I couldn't figure out why these people would get in an automobile on a Sunday and leave early and drive up those old back roads 185 miles to talk to a room full of convicts who didn't want to listen to them. I never understood that. Well, people would, like me, would sit in the back row and maybe come and make fun of them. Look at that one. I was like that, I'd quit drinking too. No wonder they quit. I said, look at that. I'm sitting in a penitentiary making fun of the people going in and out. Now, ain't that slick? That's how hip I was. I'm dying and I'm making fun out of people who ain't. Hang in there, baby. I was so hip when I got here, the balls of my feet tickled me when I walked, for Christ's sake. You see, I had never in my life before I ran into people like you, ever saw anybody who ever did anything for anybody for nothing. I could not figure that out. I could not figure out. It was beyond my comprehension, like it is most people when they come here. It's beyond my comprehension for a selfish, self-centered, self-serving person like me to figure why anybody would do anything just for the hell of doing it. It blew my mind. And so I said to somebody one time, what do you get out of coming up here? What kind of a weirdo are you, for Christ's sake? You like to come and poke holes at people in zoos? I bet you go and throw things at animals from time to time, don't you? What do you get out of it? And they said, well, you can answer that question. You won't have to ask it. Even back then, they never answered any questions. They just didn't. I guess I went into the book Alcoholics Anonymous not to discover this fantastic way of life of mine, but to prove to you I was different, then this program wouldn't work for me. Just to prove to you it was different. And sitting in a room with a man almost 31 years ago, doing what this program of recovery calls the fifth step, I heard myself admit to this man that I was an alcoholic. From way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. You see, I stand here tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. Exactly. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something, I couldn't have your program because I separated me from you. I was either better than you or worse than you or different than you. I was just not like you. See, when I became simple enough just to be an alcoholic, I have to do what the alcoholics have to do to stay sober around here. I have to practice the only program that's ever been inscribed that's the answer for a person like me in 5,000 years as there's been experience of writing about this disease of mine. This is the only answer there's ever been. Unless you can have a profound spiritual experience, and you have about as much chance of having that as you have of hitting the lottery in all 50 states at the same time. The odds aren't good. From that moment to this moment, everything in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous is something that I have wanted to do. I have just wanted to do it. I found it necessary. The reason I'm sober tonight and the reason I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous with some degree of comfort is a very, very simple little thing. I have, to the best of my ability, cleared up the wreckage of my past. I no longer live in the nightmare of my past when I'm sober. I don't have to overlook that pile of garbage and the nameless faces and things that I have done. I've cleaned up the wreckage of my past to the best of my ability. That's what this program of Alcoholics Anonymous is all about getting free inside, in here. Why I'm sober tonight is because I found the thing that I thought I found when I took my first drink of alcohol. I found the answer that I was seemingly born without. That search of mine was over. When I turned around one day in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out I wasn't looking for anything anymore. I don't know when that was. I don't have the slightest idea. And it was sometime after that admission. And it says here, and it wasn't read here tonight, but it says in the third chapter of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the second paragraph, that you have to admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. It doesn't say that I just say it in a meeting. I have to admit to my innermost. That's what happened to me sitting in that room, and I didn't even know what I was doing. So people started to come into my life and tell me bad things. People who were more concerned with saving my life and they weren't hurting my feelings. They sent me in a room and they told me that cussing was a crutch for conversational cripples. My vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words. I thought it was slick. Knew a lot about your mama, but I didn't know anything else. They stood my wrath when they corrected me. People corrected me because they loved me. They didn't overlook and make allowances. They didn't even realize how sensitive I was. I know that people are much more sensitive today than I was when I came here. I know that. You know why I know that? I hear it all the time. I had a guy tell me the other night when I went to a meeting. He said, "You want to talk about God?" And I said, "Well, probably. Why?" He said, "Oh, you shouldn't do that." I said, "Why not?" He says, "It's the newcomers. They're sensitive, you know. Talk about God, you might run them out of AA. Let me tell you, newcomers, something, or you old-timers, or you're in-betweeners. If God will run you out of Alcoholics Anonymous, whiskey will run your rusty butt back in here." I use a lot of people when I make that statement. I don't want to hear that shit about recovery. Give me some of that juicy stuff, huh? Not about juicy stuff. It's about recovery. And it's not about recovery. That's part of the psychobabble that's been brought into Alcoholics Anonymous from some outside agency. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we talk about sobriety and a way of life. And what we do, we get to stay sober today. This is the day I get to stay sober. I don't get to stay sober today just because I've been sober. I don't get to stay sober because 31 years ago I sat in a room with a man and took a fifth step. I don't get to stay sober because of that. That has something to do with it. But I don't get to stay sober because I was sober 10 years ago and did something. Or I went to an institution and carried the message last month. Or I went to a meeting last night and got this. I get to stay sober today because I come here today because it said it would. That's all. This is the day I get to stay sober. You can't rest on your laurels here. I can't rest on my laurels. I get sick. I'm a weirdo. I'm a very sick man. You don't seem to understand that. I'm getting sicker standing here watching you. I'm starting to identify with some of you, for Christ's sake. Enough to make a man want to drink. You know, I came out of that penitentiary. It'll be 30 years on the 4th of June of this year that I came out of that penitentiary. I came out to a world I didn't know anything about. People like me don't know nothing about a world out there. I didn't know what to do out there. I'm a thief and a taker and an abuser, and I ripped and run and roared. Every time I'm out there, I hadn't been on them streets since I was 8 years old. That's some type of chemical in my system. I didn't know what you do out there. Went on to see my mother. She fell off the step blind drunk. Mom's still drunk. I picked her up and put her on the couch that day and said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." Mom's 86 and she's still getting it out of a half a pint. Now she's got a few of them little pocket rockets that one of her friendly doctors has given her. She's getting real weird, Mom. But I can't get my mother sober. I don't have that kind of power. I don't have power to get anybody sober. I learned that. I don't have the power to get them drunk. I don't have anybody. I don't have the power to keep me sober. I get to stay sober because I do what I say I'm going to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to stay sober, I suppose, because I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I work with newcomers, and because if I get my emotions all out of check or something, I have a sponsor to calm them down, I guess. I tell you something I've learned. It's a fantastic thing that most people don't know. Whenever my intellect and my emotions come in conflict, my emotions always win. Always win. Never does my intellect say, you should get off that emotional jag and think about this for a while. You know what I mean? Think about what you're doing. Hell with you. And so what my sponsor does when I'm emotionally upset, you keep my emotions at a level until my intellect can catch up and realize the danger that I'm in. That's all the sponsors are good for. What else would they be good for Christ's sake? Make fun of you? Well, if you can't make fun of the newcomers, what good are they, for Christ's sake? If you get to stay sober long enough, you can make fun of the newcomers. The newcomers. Look at that weirdo. See what he did? I had one of them sponsors when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy by the name of Norm Halpy had to be the meanest man who ever lived. God, he was cruel. Yelled at me all the time. Told me, shut up. I'd be sitting in a meeting talking. Somebody, anybody, would listen to me. He'd say, shut up. Make me sit still. Told me I could wander around in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, disturbing people. Selfish, self-centered people don't know nothing about stuff like that. What did I know? Because I'd been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous didn't mean I knew anything about being unselfish or self-centered. Didn't know I had any concern for you. Why would I be? So when I got up and stumbled over you, what did I care whether you heard or not? If I sit there and talk when you were trying to listen, what did I care whether you heard or not? I was there. Nobody else was in my little world when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for Christ's sake. So I stayed sick in that little world. Thank God for my sponsor. Told me to shut up. You know what the cruelest thing he ever did to me? He was a cruel man. One night on a hot July night, I'm standing on the street corner waiting for him to come take me to a meeting, and I'm all dressed up in my brand new shorts and my tank top. And he drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. Now, this is brand new stuff, I tell you. I called him up, and I said, what are you trying to do? What are you just... You just picking on me or something? Because I'm special and you know it? Everybody likes me, and you're afraid I like me more than they like you? He said, would you go to church dressed like that? And I said, no. He said, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. Showed him. He come to pick me up the next night. I stood there in a pair of slacks and a shirt and shoes and socks. I wasn't going to let him make fun of me anymore. I showed him. I said in meetings, he didn't say nothing. I said in meetings when I had to go to the bathroom and almost wet my pants, but I wouldn't give him the credit of saying, sit still. I didn't. And when I first got sober, I used to, first thing I know, my little girl and my wife came back. I'm working. My driver's license has been suspended for the rest of my natural life, so I had to ride my little girl's bicycle to the meeting. She had a little pink bicycle. Had a big back wheel and a little bitty front wheel. Had a basket with flowers woven through it. A little bell that you could ring. I used to have to ride right through my old neighborhood past my old partners on the way to A meeting. And there they'd stand. Oh, that AA really worked. I save her some money, and I call Norm. I said, Norm, I'm going to buy a car, man. I'm tired of this crap riding this bicycle to meetings, man. It's all right. He said, do you have a driver's license? I said, no, my driver's license has been suspended to life. For what? He said, you won't drive a car for life. I said, why not?
He says, citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you who think they have a right to break all the rules. Showed him I rode the bicycle for a while. Finally, I got a driver's license. Called him up again. I got the money, I got the driver's license, and I'm going to get a car. He said, you have money for insurance? I just hung up the phone. I didn't get it. But see, if you persist in your insanity, the day will come when you can retaliate on your sponsor. The day came when I had a car, money, driver's license, and money for insurance. I just went out and bought the damn car. I didn't say nothing to him. I drove it from the car lot over to his house and honked the horn. And he come wandering out from behind the thing. And one of the greatest things that my sponsor ever taught me was what he said then. He said how proud he was of me because I finally seemed to get the idea that just because I was sober, there wasn't a damn thing special about me at all. That I wasn't any different than anybody else just because I didn't drink alcohol or live in institutions anymore. He said, maybe you seem to get the idea that you have to live by the rules just like everybody else has to live by the rules out here. Maybe if you get that idea into your sick head, you'll be able to stay sober. He says, as a matter of fact, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you should be able to do a little. I'm a little boogie. I like that rock and roll stuff when I'm there. I think that's the greatest. If I stand here before you tonight and say the greatest lesson I've ever learned since I've been in sober, been in Alcoholics Anonymous, is the fact that there ain't nothing special about me just because I've been sober. Nothing. I have never had the right to use alcohol as an excuse for being a jerk. I have never had the right to think that I have a right to come and sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and disturb it just because I'm sober. I've never had a right to do anything. I've always figured a privilege to come in here and sit around you good people. I didn't think I have a right to do that. My sponsor told me, taught me, with everything that he taught me the greatest lesson a clown, an egotistical, self-centered clown like me can learn. That there ain't a damn thing special about me just because I have the privilege of coming and sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a thing. And there ain't a damn thing special about you just because you're sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous either. Nobody has a right to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous just because they don't drink. It's a privilege for us clowns to be sitting here not killing one another. No damn right to be here. People think they have rights to be here. I'm a right. Birthday. Give me my birthday cake. God damn it, I've been sober. Take your own cake. You got so much right, Jesus. Take it. I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 6 years sober. And all hell had broken loose. My wife had committed suicide. I was buried in debt. I was living in a $60 a month rented room in East Long Beach. I'm working 14, 16 hours a day. My little girls are somewhere else where I can't take care of them. And I'm going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm hearing people get up at podiums like this and say, well, I really don't know what it was. I was out there the other day, and the rent was due, and I went to the mailbox, and God had just sent me a check. I knew there was something wrong. God wasn't sending me any checks. And what was wrong? Well, I got in my head at that time. You see, I must not be worthy enough. I must not be one of the chosen people around here. God is doing for all these other people, but he's not doing it for me. And God, look what I'm doing. I'm going to meetings and doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Listen to what my sponsor says. I'm doing all this kind of stuff. I've learned to. I don't have those type of egotistical ideas in my head anymore. You know what I've learned about God since I've been here? I learned that God won't do anything for me that I can do for myself. That's as simple as I know how to tell you. That's as simple as I know how to tell you. There's nothing in the world that God will do for me that I can do for myself. There's only been one thing in my entire life I've never been able to do. I cannot keep from taking a drink of alcohol. I couldn't do it before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't do it since I've been here. I can't do it from this day forward. I cannot keep from drinking. I can't drink and live, and of myself, I can't keep from drinking, and yet I'm not drinking. Obviously, something's had to happen to me. The only thing that's ever happened in my life is a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't been in any other offshoots. Why go to an imitation when you can get the real deal here, man? I never wanted to shoot candy either. I wanted heroin. I want to shoot some laxative up my arm or something, for Christ's sake. I just never see him. This is the answer. My answer. I've seen people stand in Alcoholics Anonymous programs all the time and say, A ain't enough. Got to go over here and do this. I'm going to tell you something. Anybody who was standing at a program of Alcoholics Anonymous tell you Alcoholics Anonymous is not enough has never tried Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what they're trying. But they ain't tried Alcoholics Anonymous, I know it. See, the greatest thing in the world that could possibly ever happen to a clown happens to me in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. The thing that I looked for all my life before I came here happened to me sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what it is? I sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd be more concerned about your well-being sometimes than I am my own. I come and sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I sit there and I watch people and I'm more concerned about their life than I am about my own. And in that instant of my life, and it never happens on a continuing basis because I'm selfish and self-centered and self-serving, but in that instant of my life, I'm as close to my God as I'm ever going to get. As close to my God as I'm ever going to get. A man said a long, long time ago, if you would empty yourself of self, you would be automatically full of God. Automatically. And I've searched and searched and searched. I didn't know what I was looking for. I turned around one day and sat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and was more concerned with what was going on in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was about my little selfish, self-centered, self-seeking things. And in that instant of my life, I was as free as a bird, and I was as close to my God as I was ever going to get. I know Alcoholics Anonymous works. Alcoholics Anonymous works under any type of circumstances, if you work it. It won't work if you just sit there and don't do nothing. It won't work. I heard a guy say it one time. I saw him at dinner. I heard a guy say, just because you go sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous does not make you a member of Alcoholics Anonymous any more than going sitting in a chicken coop would make you a chicken. That's true. It goes back to that I have a right crap. You do things around here. You give of yourself. To have something, you got to give something. To be something, you have to give something. And takers never seem to learn that. Takers never seem to learn, but the only way they're ever going to survive here is to be a giver. You give a little for the hell of giving it, my old sponsor used to say. And that's really true. There was an old man that I ran around with who taught me and reiterated the fact that there was nothing special about me just because I was sober. But he did it in a different way than Norm did it. But it was all the same message. The people, the great people in my life who have run through my life have all taught me the same thing, that it's a privilege for me to come and be with you good people, not do I have a right to be here. I was going home from a meeting one night with Chuck, and I just didn't know what to say to him, so I stole a piece of paper off of a thing to read to him, and we're riding down the street, and I said, I'd like to read this to you because I think it's neat. He said, what is it? I said, why we were chosen. He said, we're not chosen. I said, it says here. He said, I don't care what that says. We're not chosen. What makes you think we're chosen? He said, we're all God's kids. All of us are. If I am, you are, and if you are, I am. I said, oh. He said, he makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust, Johnny. And then in my smart aleck way, I said to him, then how come I'm sober? I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who can't stay sober. How come I'm sober? And he says, that's very simple. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. Isn't that amazing? How do God's kids act? Let me tell you how God's kids act, because I've been watching them and trying to imitate them around here for 31 years. God's kids come in and sit down in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and pay attention to what's going on in AA. God's kids come in and sit down in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and they're concerned about the people sitting next to them. God's kids stand up and act like Alcoholics Anonymous has given them something. God's kids are shining examples that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works, and if they don't get nothing out of AA, they sure got them a set of drapes. That's simple. That's the way God's kids act. God's kids help kids get things done that need to be done. That's what God's kids do. And you know why I know that's true? Because I watched the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who stay sober do that. And I watched the people in here who don't stay sober not do it. That's not an opinion. That's a fact based on experience sitting around in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for 31 years watching what people do around here. Watching what they do. So if you want to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I suggest a very simple thing. I can tell you how to stay sober for 31 years. You get a sponsor so you don't have an idiot running your life. That's number one. You attend meetings on a regular basis, particularly one, some type of a home group, and you're there every time that meeting meets. And you try to find newcomers at that meeting and ask them how they're doing, whether you care or not. Do what you're asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you pick up a telephone and you answer a telephone in a very simple way. If the date's open, it belongs to you. I was taught that here. And if you do things like that, that whether it's suicides, business failures, divorces, children on drugs, people on drugs that you love, people that you love dying and not coming around here and dying and going away and dying and going away, you can stay sober. You can stay sober if you have that type of discipline and that type of structure in your life. And if you don't, there's a good chance that you can't stay sober. Because the people who don't stay sober don't have that. Somehow or other, they seemingly don't seem to think that they need to do it. But I do believe this. I do believe that deep down inside of every alcoholic I've ever known is a burning desire for unity. To be with oneself and with one's God and with one's people around them. And if Alcoholics Anonymous has done nothing for me, it's done something that theology didn't do. Theology took God and put him over there somewhere where he was totally unattainable. Too far above and too far to reach. Alcoholics Anonymous took God from over there and put him right smack dab in here where he belongs. Put him right smack dab in you where I can sit and look and see God's handiwork before me. Don't miss this thing. It's so fantastic you can't believe it. If you're new, sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, man, hang on to this thing like dear life. Hang on to it. It may be the only shot you get. People walk out that door and die and never get back. This is a killer, killer illness. It's not something you just show up once in a while and see what's going on around here. This disease kills people. It's the deadliest killer that there is to man, a disease called alcoholism. A guy that I loved very much one time was sponsoring me, was 9 years sober. He came to me with a little saying that I've adopted that I love more than life itself because it's the greatest piece of truth that I know. The problem is that he forgot about it. Now he's standing up in meetings, a newcomer with 90 days sober after 9 or 10 years of sobriety. The saying is this: if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. I know that's a little deep for San Jose, but they just grab stuff like that in Belfast and go, wow! Stick down there. It means what it says. There's no hidden psychological evaluation there. I guess that's why it goes over all you Stanford people. It means very simply, if you're sitting in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're got a football in your gut and you're restless and you're irritable and you're discontent and things ain't going the way you want them to go, keep on doing what you're doing. You're going to keep on getting what you're getting. Very simple. Chuck said it like this: you can't think your way into right living, you got to live your way into right thinking. That means if you're staying in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and there's some peace in your soul and joy in your heart, then you keep on doing what you're doing. You're going to keep on getting what you're getting. There ain't no way to beat it. I don't know about a living soul who sits in this room. Not at all. I can only tell you that for me, and only for me, I'm going to keep on doing what I've been doing, because I sure do like what I've been getting. Thank you.